This is episode number 27 with Vice President of Finance, Aziz Mamatov. Welcome to the Super Data Science Podcast. My name is Kirill Eremenko, data science coach and lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you inspiring people and ideas to help you build your successful career in data science. Thanks for being here today, and now let's make the complex simple. Welcome, welcome everybody to the Super Data Science Podcast. Super excited to see you on the show. Today we've got an unexpected guest, somebody who actually reached out to me to talk about finance and about life in Silicon Valley, Aziz Mamatov. So Aziz has completed an MBA with INSEAD, which is one of the two most prestigious MBA providers in the world. INSEAD is a European-based one. And he actually contacted Yao Tan, who was in episode number 10 of the Super Data Science Podcast. And Yao then connected us, Aziz and me. And yeah, it was really funny because Aziz also speaks Russian, and when we jumped on the Skype call to talk about financial situation in the world and how data is disrupting the space of finance, Aziz has some amazing thoughts about that, by the way. When we jumped on the call, it was as if we had known each other for ages. And yeah, it was a really good chat, and we connected instantly, and we decided to record this podcast for you guys. So I think you will learn quite a bit from here. Specifically, Aziz has some interesting thoughts around how data is changing the world of finance and how previously it was all focused around regulations and about auditing and accounting and tax accounting and all of these branches of the finance space of any company were heavily focused on regulation, whereas now there's all these data science tools that help you actually derive useful value, and therefore companies should start looking at finance from a different lens. And that's one thing we talked about. And the other thing, and this is what we started the podcast off with, is Aziz's career. And I think that because we are a career-focused platform, and we want to help everybody build their careers, whether or not you're looking for a new job, or you just want to enhance your existing career, or you are a manager or an owner of a company, we want to help you succeed in that. It was a great addition to our library of podcasts because Aziz actually went step by step through his experience and through the companies that he's worked with in his life. And I'm looking at his LinkedIn right now. There's like, I don't know, 5 or 7 different companies, big ones as well. World famous companies like Ernst & Young, or it used to be Arthur Andersen, I think was the one he mentioned. Then World Bank, Morgan Stanley, quite a few big names have come up in his career. And he actually went step by step through them. And I think you can take away some mentality about thinking about your career from this example. So I highly encourage you to actually, if you're in front of your computer, which you're probably not, which you're probably in somewhere in the car or something like that, but that's fine. But if you are in front of your computer, or if you get to your computer later on, open up Aziz's LinkedIn so you can actually follow along as he's walking through these companies that he's worked for, and it'll help you see how he's jumped along in his career and where it has taken him. So I think it can give you some ideas and thoughts about how to think about your own career. And you can get the URL to his LinkedIn at www.superdatascience.com/27. And now, without any further ado, I bring to you Vice President of Finance at Source Easy, Aziz Mamatov. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Super Data Science Podcast. Today, I've got a very unexpected and a very interesting guest, Aziz Mamatov. Hi, Aziz. How are you going today?
Hey, Kirill. Good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And where are you calling in from?
I'm calling from sunny San Francisco, the capital of innovation of the world.
Oh, that's fantastic. We were just chatting with Aziz just now, and he said, asked him what the weather was, like 15 degrees. And I thought, Fahrenheit? No way, it's not Fahrenheit. It's 15 degrees Celsius. So slowly getting through the winter, right?
Actually, we don't have a winter, but it's been raining pretty heavily lately, and it's good because we have a drought actually for the last 4 years, and now we have the biggest rainfall for the last 10 years or something. But today is sunny and everything is cool.
Wow, that's huge. 4 years of drought. Well, good to hear that it's slowly ended that drought. For our listeners out there, I just wanted to tell the story of how Aziz and I met. It was funny. We actually met for the first time like just now, like 20 minutes ago. And Aziz said that he had listened to some of my podcasts, taken some of the courses, and then he just wanted to get in touch. And so he connected with one of my friends, Yao, who's also been on the podcast, and like we got in touch with this. And like as we met 20 minutes ago, it really felt like we knew each other for ages, right?
Yeah, it did. I was actually, I had the same sensation with another guy. I'm not sure if you follow UFC, MMA fighting. Okay, so
A little
a
bit.
little bit. So there is a famous fighter. His name is Khabib Nurmagomedov, and he's the best Russian fighter. I think one of the most Russian athletes right now. And I met him here. He's training here, and I look at him, and I have this sensation that I know him for years. And he kind of looks at me like, "Do I know you?" You know? And I realize, yeah, I'm looking at him like he's my best friend or relative or whatever. And he's looking at me like he looks at me and he realizes that he doesn't know. He literally sees me first time. And then I kind of realize, yeah, because you see them, you follow them, they're in your whatever dreams, and you think about them. And the same with you. I listen to you so much time. When I look at you, "Hey, dude, how are you?"
Yeah, but I gotta say you're also a very personable person. So when we were chatting, it was very easy to get along. And yeah, so it was interesting to meet up. Thanks a lot for that email you sent through. So Aziz sent me an email explaining his view on the finance situation in the world and how data is disrupting the finance space. And I found it extremely interesting. And I, without hesitation, invited Aziz over to the podcast. So that's probably what we're going to be focusing on. So if any of you folks are out there in the space of finance or in the space of management, I think you'll get a lot from this podcast. And to kick us off, Aziz, give us a bit of your background. Like what did you study and where are you working now? What's your role?
Yeah, so I guess like any person from Europe or whatever, Central Asia, usually when you say background is where you're from. I'm from Uzbekistan, which was a part of Soviet Union, and that's how we can consider each other compatriots, and we speak kind of the same language, Russian. Yeah, so that's why probably familiarity. And so I was born and raised in Uzbekistan, and then 20 years ago I studied at the States, in great state of Alabama. I did my bachelor's in molecular biology and biochemistry, and back then I entered PhD program, and I decided that I'm not going to do it because back then the scientists, the engineers, they were not a sexy profession. So I thought, hey, I need to get a proper suit and something
Yes.
important.
Hey, I need to get a proper sexy profession, right?
Exactly.
You are after the sexy
Of
professions.
course, I wanted to get money, I wanted to get fame, I wanted to get recognition from my peers and not sit like a lab rat somewhere. That's what I thought. So lo and behold, I joined Arthur Andersen, which was a fantastic Big Five firm then. And I spent 7 years there working. I joined in Uzbekistan, and then I worked in Russia, in France, and Kazakhstan. So I worked in four countries. It was a great career. It was pretty tough. I mean, it was really tough. And then Arthur Andersen kind of went bankrupt. There was a huge scandal with Enron. Some of our listeners will probably know. And then I had a couple of stints at industrial companies, Philip Morris, AES, they're all huge public companies. And before I went to MBA, I worked with the World Bank in
Oh,
Russia.
wow.
Yeah, I did. It sounds like they're glorious, but it's pretty simple bureaucratic job. You know, it's one of the simplest jobs I ever had in terms of complexity. It wasn't very technical. So in 2008, I entered INSEAD MBA program. So it's one of the top MBA programs in the world. It's based in France and Singapore. And I studied there for a year. And December 2008, I graduated, and there was nothing. There was a huge financial crisis, no jobs, especially for MBAs. So it was great times. Oh my God. So I didn't have a job because like my job offer, like was no more job offer. So I went back to Uzbekistan, spent like a couple of months there, kind of gathering myself together. And then I joined a fintech startup based in London, which was like providing loans to MBA students from INSEAD and a couple of other universities. And INSEAD alums organized it. They were South African lads. And so I was like employee number four. They're still active. Their name is Prodigy Finance. They're based in South Africa. And now when I look back, I wish they moved to Silicon Valley because they would be a $1 billion company. Now I think they're like, yes, I think so. Because like they have all the results for success.
Wow, that's really cool. So just to clarify, this is a startup that gave out money to MBA graduates, but you joined them as an MBA graduate. You actually joined the startup. You became part of the team.
Yes, so they gave me a loan. And it was really a good loan. And I was a citizen of Uzbekistan. I could not get any loans from anywhere. And so they gave me a secured loan because like alums were investing kind of in this alternative investment where they would get returns from loans to folks like me. And so the credit score, whatever they did in Excel showed like fantastic results. The predictive analytics that those lads did in Excel promised like low rates of non-payments. So like it was a no-brainer. And plus there's like a social element in it. So people loved it and it grew.
And I guess also, you know, MBA students are inherently have a lower risk of non-repayment just because of, these are people who have invested into their education, who have a certain perception of the world, who have a higher chance of actually starting a business or going and doing something that will help them find the finance to repay the loan. I guess that's another selling point for the company as well.
Yeah, I would say more. Usually top MBA students are hellbent individuals on career and success in a classical understanding of the world, right? Like majority of people I've seen, and including myself, were basically like striving for career, for good money, for approval from peers and you name it, like whatnot. And of course, for such hellbent and driven individuals, like you would basically, it's like a perfect path to success, at least in average management role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally understand. All right, and so you stayed there for what, like just over a year?
Yeah, so it was a year program. It was in Paris, so I spent all my time in Paris. Which was like another experience by itself. And then I went to London, and in London I stayed for, I worked with the company for more than a year, and then they decided to go back to South Africa because they hated the weather and they felt that they could have done their job from South Africa better than from London. And so I left and I joined immediately the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Kazakhstan. It's basically a fund which manages like 40 billion in assets, like in various Kazakhstani-based public companies. And I became a CFO of Alternative Assets Arm. So basically Sovereign Wealth Fund of Kazakhstan opened a fund of funds, $600 million, and they were investing in private equity funds, primarily in Russia and Kazakhstan. So the aim was to create an alternative investment platform, private equities, venture funds, maybe even hedge funds in Kazakhstan and maybe Russia, right? So I was working there as CFO for 3 years.
Yep, gotcha. That's really cool. That's already a huge position. Like, where did you go from there? Even higher?
Yeah, of course. I ended up in the Silicon Valley. So, yeah. In 2010, actually, no, 2014 and 15, right? Things started changing and I was not content with the job. I don't think it was interesting. It was quasi-governmental and it's Kazakhstan. So not a lot of knowledge, not a lot of things that you can learn, and it's pretty political, right? So I felt kind of, I felt unsatisfaction in my job, and I didn't see myself kind of learning or growing there. And then there was a Silicon Valley lure, like all these Facebooks, and you name them, right? And I had a green card, so my wife and I and my kids decided to pack up and move to Silicon Valley. So I was in the conference, like with my Sovereign Wealth Fund job, I was like shipped to the conference in San Francisco, and I loved it, like the weather, the bridge, the whatever. And then like some of my relatives lived here, so I decided, okay, that's it. I'm going to join Facebook or Google and don my suit and tie and become the next, I don't know, tech entrepreneur.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, the American dream.
Yes.
All right. So how did that turn out? Did you put down your suit and tie?
Yes, actually. Well, for time being. So I moved here like in 2014, right? So it's like less than 3 years ago, and it's been testing times. It's a separate discussion, right? Yeah, it's a testing times. And I had a couple of consulting stints and everything. And I was like slowly realizing that, dude, like I changed the country and I changing the industry as well, because I was like in financial services, somewhere like in international backwaters. And now I'm kind of tech. It's tech, right? It's a different culture, a different everything.
So it was slowly dawning on me that I'm like in a tech land. I changed the industry, and like it's hard to change the industry and profession kind of and country at the same time. It's really hard. I was basically kind of taken aback with like I didn't realize that it would take so much effort and even like money to get back to feed, right? So I had like a couple of consulting gigs because like I mean, finance at the end of the day is not that complicated. And I was always thinking, like, what's going on? What's going on here, right? And, like, so many people want to hit the Silicon Valley, right? Like, everyone in the world and in America basically tried to land a job in Silicon Valley first and then New York. So the competition is ridiculous. And even though you can apply to any job, like, via whatever, internet, they're, like, hundreds of resumes, and if you don't know somebody, if you don't have references or some outstanding resume which fits exactly the profile, then it's pretty hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you eventually found a job at Morgan Stanley, and then eventually now you're vice president of finance at a quite a large company as well, right?
It's not. It's a startup.
It's a startup.
So, it is startup. Yeah, it's. I don't like these titles like VP finance, and sometimes I think like, why are the titles for startups? And maybe because of like some legal reasons, I'm not sure. Like, I still need to understand. Like before, I was kind of fighting for startup gigs. No, like for titles, but now I'm like, I hate titles so much because I spent so much time in corporate ladder that like it doesn't make sense to me anymore.
Yeah, but you got to give us something. Like I just want our listeners to really understand the journey that you've been through, and it was great how you described all of these gigs in detail that you've been part of. And I think a lot of our listeners who are focused on the career can take away from that you've never stood still. You've always, whenever you felt like you cannot learn more, you cannot propel your career further, you're getting kind of stuck, you weren't hesitant to move it forward. And also I want our listeners to see where that has led you. Like I understand you don't really like titles, and you know you're trying to be very modest here, but you are the vice president of finance of a like a startup, and you said you have like 60 people working in the team, right? So it's not like a 5-person company. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is.
Your choice of not being afraid to move on with your career, to explore new places, like move to different countries, change companies, has actually led you to a great place. You know, it's a lot of experience that you've had, and also the actual current role that you're in. Would you say that it's something that you enjoy doing?
Yes, I do. It's a great role. I guess I'll get back to it a bit. I was thinking, like, we're going to be chatting, right? And like, majority of your podcast is kind of more or less technical in nature. And I was thinking, like, what can I add? Yeah, like, technique is something very important. But I guess, like, you need to land a career, right, in data science, or like in whatever, in business analytics, or in some, like, in some other place where you're living now. And probably, like, many people need some kind of inspiration or advice on what to expect when you change the career, because like many of data science people are career changes, right? And I think that this is something that we can speak about, especially since I cannot add too many technical nuances or details about data science.
Yeah, no, and I totally agree. That's a very, very important part, because building a career is not just about learning the technical aspects of the job. It's also about appreciating what it takes to get the career that you want. So I'd love to talk more about that. So we've got kind of two topics that we want to cover off. So the career building, and also I would love for you to share your views on the current situation in finance. So maybe let's start with the career building. If you can give us your tips and hacks and ideas and recommendations for career building, and then we'll move on to your perception of what's happening in the world of finance. Does that sound like a good plan?
Yeah, sure. I guess everyone, like, I like the podcast with your brother, and he was pretty good at explaining like how he's going to choose the career, and he was not preaching or anything, and I really liked it. And he was saying like, choose something that kind of that makes sense to you. And he was kind of quoting David Pink, or not David, but Mr. Pink, who wrote a book about like what's important. And I agree with it. It's basically three pillars. It's mastery, autonomy. Yeah, purpose.
This is a good start. We're getting to the golden nuggets. All right. So you agree with my brother, mastery, autonomy, purpose.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How have you applied in your those principles in your career building?
I probably have not. I was just chasing something, you know. I was chasing money and recognition, you know, because, hey, this is what Generation X has been doing, right? I, like, missed a couple of years to join the millennials, so I can properly call myself a Generation Xer. And, yeah, so you don't, I mean... And then you had to pick whatever has been on the table. So the capitalism came to us, all the new companies, the growth, and we just joined the horde of like capitalists, people in ties, marketers, financiers, whatever. But I guess it's something that you need kind of to select based on those like three pillars. But again, like, how do you select what you like? Like, majority of people, they don't know what they want. And for sure, they don't want to like spend their time in the office doing some like lame stuff. Like, there's another thing that I was thinking, like, great things, they're pretty hard. Like, imagine that you didn't have any needs, any financial needs, everything was kind of satisfied. Then you would have nothing to do, right? No aspirations, and everything like would be answered. But when you want to achieve something, then it comes to your heart. Like, you did martial arts, right? Or you're doing it. And it's hard, right? Like, first couple of years, it's just painful. But then you start enjoying it. It's like, hey, and there's a mastery coming and maybe some kind of purpose, whatever. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that, like, remember those, but learn cold, hard skills. Like statistics, math, physics, programming. this will be useful.
Good point. Good point. And those are skills that last through time, right? Those are skills that they get outdated a bit. You know, maybe the new algorithms pop up in statistics or modeling principles and so on. But generally speaking, you're setting yourself up for the future because you're going to keep leveraging those skills for years to come.
Yes. You know, like we're talking about career right now, like not like a profession where you work for someone and you get paid or you like sell some kind of product. So I'm not talking about like musicians, artists, or like sportsmen. It's different. Like I'm not going to touch on that. So if you follow some kind of profession, then that's what I'm thinking. Like the latest, not even the fad, but the latest foundations of technology. So like technology is going to change the world. Software is eating the world. And so if you want to be part of it, kind of like do it. And then you decide what you want to do. Do you want to be a developer or you want to be a business person? So it's up to you, but at least have those skills. So my advice is learn like hard skills, and I call them like programming, math, including statistics, right, which is a branch of math. And then work a bit and then decide what you want to do with your life in profession, I'm talking about.
And that's very in line with what you've illustrated in your example, right? It's not like you've set yourself a goal at the very start after university that I want to be, you know, vice president of finance or something, and you just work towards that. You were always experimenting with your career and moving around the place, moving around different roles and learning what you like as you go along.
Actually not. I was a finance person, like, and I'm still a finance guy, and I'm defined by this profession, right? Still, like, this is something that pays me money. I have a certain mastery in it, right? And I still don't have a purpose yet in this profession, right? Like in what I'm doing. And maybe not as much autonomy as I want. And probably why I'm doing data science, why I'm learning, maybe not even the data science, but kind of, yeah, like database. Okay, let's call it data science or business analytics. Because I want to probably achieve like more autonomy and more mastery. And maybe we'll come to some kind of purpose as a result of that. But I'm finance guy through and through. And there are like so many people around who are finance people like me, like accountants or investment bankers, financial analysts. And like the profession is changing right now. While I sit here in Silicon Valley, we're like, all questions are asked. There's nothing set in stone. Everything is changing constantly, and people adopt new technologies and everything, and they make money out of it. So it's not like, hey, let's just adopt something new because it's cool. No, like they make money out of it. And I sit here and I realize that, hey, financial profession is up to huge change. And like my friends, you better change and start doing something right now.
Interesting. That's a very good segue into what you wrote in the email, that you're seeing these changes. And I'll probably mention just one of the things that, you know, really struck me is that what you said was that originally finance and, you know, things like accounting, auditing, tax, they were designed or being executed in companies with a lot of focus on regulation rather than the actual analytics, the actual value that can be derived from accounting and from all of this bookkeeping and all of these financial aspects that are present in running any company. You can derive a lot of value from them, but originally this was all being created with a heavy focus on the regulatory environment. And now you're saying that things are changing, that companies are starting to realize that there is data, there are tools to interact with this data, and there's value to be derived from that data. And that is what is disrupting, or that is one of the things that is disrupting the finance space right now. Could you elaborate on that a little bit more, please?
Yes, it's such a huge topic, and it's just brewing into my mind right now. And I'm looking for directions to get more information. So probably what I'm telling you now is going to change like in 6 months or a year. So because it's brewing inside me, like it's always struck me, like I'm a certified accountant of the UK, right? I became a ACCA, I think like 10 years ago. And what struck me is that how codified the profession is, how like not much actual technical knowledge and logic there is, like not much, and how much of some strange, exotic, exuberant information there. So it's not like a lawyer profession, but still, like they put so much unnecessary stuff in the accounting profession that it struck me. And as a result, like what you produce is some kind of backwards looking statement. Like after months of work, after like sweating over some kind of reconciliations and accounting, like you produce, hey, here's the financials for the last year, comparing versus like our budgets and versus previous years. And here you go. So what does exactly this information tells you? I mean, yeah, it tells you the past, okay, up to T, and it lets your auditors check your numbers, say, hey, like they did not do mistakes, so they're kind of reliable and trustworthy bean counters. But like it doesn't tell you anything. So how does it help other stakeholders? How does it help your shareholders? How does it help the people who work in your organization? It does not. Like salespeople, marketing people, like you name them, production people, they had no idea like what are they doing and what kind of results are they having. Like they were the last in the queue to be presented with financial results. So because it didn't matter anymore. And it all like was some kind of, it was created not for the people, but for compliance purposes. And the accounting profession became like extremely cautious, extremely careful profession, where like the cost of mistake was so great that the downsides were huge while the upsides like were few. So that's why it became like bean counting profession, where you basically count what's happened in the past and you do not care much about the future.
That's a very interesting point, and I'll agree with you to some extent. But at the same time, there are elements of accounting that work with predicting, you know, return on investment, predicting forecasting what the next, you know, 3 to 5 years are going to look like in terms of revenue. What do you think about all of that?
Oh my God, it's you should see those valuations. Especially those like when the Tesla bought Sun Solar or yeah.
Solar City.
Solar City. Yeah. So there was a really great blog post by a professor from Columbia or like some other university based in New York. I don't know. Have you read it?
No, I haven't seen it. No.
Okay. So he was basically discussing this merger and how it was done. So basically, Tesla acquired this company and it's the same shareholder. There's like no sense making this acquisition. And the investment bankers, they did some kind of valuation where they proved that this thing makes sense, right? And it was like all kinds of conflicts of interest. And the spreadsheet which they produced was like ridiculously simple with some kind of drivers and assumptions which can prove any point, you know? So, and this is what exactly has been done by investment banks. So they create some spreadsheets and put some assumptions there and say, hey, your revenue may be anything from like, no, your share may be worth anything from $1 to $1,000. And here we go, you know? And you're like, really? You know, really? It's so simple. It's so unbelievably simple that you would be totally surprised. But, you know how much the online training companies charge for those valuation courses? Like there are a couple of, like they charge you thousands of dollars. I think maybe like, you know what's interesting? If you want to learn those skills, like discounted cash flow valuation, three statement comp analysis, you know, all that kind of buzzwords from investment banking world, you're like, oh, how do I do it? And then you go to, there's a website, Breaking into Wall Street, which kind of discuss how do you join the glamorous hordes of investment bankers, right? Who get like exorbitant amount of money and prestige. And then you're, okay, I need to take this course. And this course costs like $500. Like, it's the cheapest one. It's pretty good, but it's like, it's all an Excel-based course. It's nothing in complexity compared to whatever your course is, or like any other course in data science or programming or statistics. It's like nothing like that, not even close to it. And you're paying like this money, and like to other providers, you would pay even more. So you see, like, I'm talking about facts, and something is wrong there, and it's ripe for a change.
Yeah, interesting. All right, what else do you see in the finance industry that is that our listeners should be aware of that's being disrupted by data science?
Yeah, so before you had to, because you had to produce impeccable financial reports according to certain standards and procedures, and had to undertake the auditor's review, and nothing was automated. Like, you had to install certain systems like SAP or Scala or Oracle, whatever. And they might be great system, right? But they were so rigid and so non-user friendly, because they were designed not by your Steve Jobs, who is like product manager, who wanted to create products that would be user friendly, but they were creating like enterprise products, which were supposed to be ugly and complicated.
And which was supposed to be ugly. That should be a quote.
Of course. Of course. Because like some people, IT folk in the rooms without any windows would be serving those unbelievably outdated enterprise software solutions, right? So, and we had to endure them. I mean, I remember, like, I had no idea. I was like, oh, how do you produce, like, how do you get this report? Oh, you should, like, write a script somewhere, and then it will spit out something to your Excel, and then you need to work with it. Oh, really? Oh, my God. What if I want to do like that? Oh, dude, it's not possible. You need to write some kind of, like, order, service order to your IT people, and some guy, like, tired guy will come over and say, hey, I'm going to do it to you, like, within 2 weeks or something. And you're like, oh, my God. So what I want to say is that, like, enterprise accounting solutions and finance solutions were run by those behemoths, right? And the finance people, your accountants and finance people, would just, like, they had no idea how the information is collected. What's the point of collection information? How it is stored? How can you retrieve it? And how you can manipulate it? So it was just a black box from where you were given a couple of scripts and you could produce some strange reports to do your work efficiently. So majority of work has been done in Excel, which is a total anarchy.
Interesting. So you're saying that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm getting from you that these huge enterprise solutions like SAP, for instance, they're outdated, and with time they're going to be replaced with newer, more agile software.
Yes, they will. There was an interview by Mr. Andreessen. I don't know his name. And he's one of the founders of like the most famous VC in the world, based in Silicon Valley, Andreessen Horowitz. And he was kind of, I really love that interview. I didn't know if I sent it to you or not. It's a fantastic interview. And among those, he was saying, hey, like SAP is a software made like for companies back from like 50s, which have technology back from 60s, and the software back from like 70s, you know? And it's like so outdated and not helping that like something should be done with it. And now we have a whole host of solutions which are coming to the fore. So, and it struck me, right? Like, so what's happening now is that before it was enterprise solutions which were kind of sifting through to the consumers. So like enterprises were adopting the modern solutions, and then the consumers would get like a glimpse of those solutions, right? But now it's a different world. It's like consumers get the solutions first, and then enterprises adopt them. And we're talking about Box, like AWS, and like you name them. And because like the cloud technology and the UX design and like many other things, and like the programming, like all this ecology and infrastructure became so developed, which allowed for huge collaboration, for huge efficiencies in like in developing world, in developmental world, and in security and in cloud, right? And for users to actually being able to use those solutions and kind of and change them as they wish, right? To tailor them to their needs. So we have those solutions which are adopted first like by small companies, and then they're coming and becoming the enterprise solutions. So the same is happening, I think, right now in the finance world.
Interesting, very interesting. So where would you recommend our listeners to focus their attention if they're interested in the space of finance, if they're interested in either they're already in the space of finance or they're looking to get into that space? What do you think they should be aware of and should prepare for in the future?
I think the modern finance, I don't like the word executive, but like a finance manager, let's put this word manager, should kind of know three things. One is accounting, basically like what is it, what is the system of double entry and what's a P&L balance sheet and cash flow, and finance. So what's a discounted cash flow? And it's so simple. It's like you can learn it like within 1 year, no problem. Or maybe half a year. Like your career, you'll probably learn it like within a month. Like I promise. Really. It's like it's no brainer.
I studied that for my master's degree, so I'm quite aware of the double entry system and all those things. So, and I agree that it's if somebody is studying data science, it's not hard to learn finance. You know, not taking away merit from the people who study finance, but it's just all logical. It's great in the sense that it's logical. So if you can study data science, you can master finance, no problem. Definitely, and if you're interested in, definitely check it out. Don't be afraid of all the uncertainty that a new degree brings to you.
Yeah, you can learn it like no problems. Just find a like nice course and do it. So it's one domain. The second domain to me is, I guess, kind of understanding of the data, where it comes from, where it is stored, and how you can use it. So how you can manipulate it, how you can store it in like in repositories, right? And how you can take it like using the SQL scripts, and then how you can process it using whatever like regression or any other statistical tools you have, you know? So this is something that finance people should know, maybe not like all the steps, but at least they should be aware that this is how it's done, and they should be able to ask like legitimate and requests from like data scientists or software engineers. And the third one is, I would say this is like a project management. And I'm still kind of trying to understand what is it. Like we all understand the process, business processes, and like all these lines, like who does what, separation of duties, authorization, like where the document appears, how like its life cycle of the document and the walkthroughs and whatever. So I think like people kind of should understand that, like how to formalize the business processes, how they're formalized, how do you read all those like schemas of the business processes. And also something from that area as well is like a like project management, whatever you name it, agile or whatever. I don't like this. I don't understand this word yet. But project management in whatever form it is, right? So I would recommend everyone kind of focusing on those three pillars, and this will help tremendously.
Interesting. So just to sum up, if you're looking to build your career, and this has been a great podcast, like we're really focusing on career building this time. It's very interesting. So if you're interested in getting to a career in finance management or being executive in the space of finance, then there's three pillars that you need to focus on. Of course, first one would be accounting and finance, naturally. And I actually think that's very good acumen for anybody in the business world, whatever level. If you're in a managerial position, it's always a good thing to know, because that will help you plan your, you know, budgets and all your expenses and so on. If you're in charge of a department, and if you have your own business, like you're a entrepreneur, that's also a very valuable set of skills to have. Second domain that you should focus on is the actual data science side of things. So understanding data, understanding what tools you have and how you can apply them. And that will really, I agree, that it will give you a good edge, a competitive edge over, your peers or over other companies who are not applying those data science tools to their finances. And finally, some project management skills. Of course, they are extremely necessary, and you've got the agile method. You've got what other methods do we have? Waterfall methods, and so and other methods and other software to help you with your project management. So, very interesting combination of three skills. And so, as is, you're right now, I'm taking that you're mostly focused on developing your data science side of things. Is that correct?
Yes, I can say I'm focusing. I'm aware of it, and I'm trying to spend like an hour a day at least to do it. But I'm realizing that like I need to spend a day or maybe more or maybe a week and just like do it without interruptions. But I'm spending time in it, so it's brewing inside me. And that's what I'm doing now.
No, I think it's actually a very good approach. I think a lot of people can learn from that yes, sometimes it's worthwhile actually sitting down and doing something for a whole day or even a whole week, but an hour a day, that is just golden. Like personally, I'm taking a course now on exponential thinking and entrepreneurship, and I wish I had the dedication, but more the kind of like commitment to actually spend an hour a day. I try to spend like 1 or 2 hours a day, but sometimes I skip a day or so, and I've only gotten into that course just recently. And another one that, a language. When you're learning a language, same thing. Like, for instance, I'm learning Czech now. And when you learn a language, if you spend an hour a day for a year, you will be fluent in that language a year later. It's just about the commitment and finding the time. So I think you've got the right approach. And I think just keep going with that, and I think you're on the right track. So what are you currently studying in terms of data science?
I'm taking your courses. So I'm kind of between two courses now. One is introductory Python. Yeah, I have like interesting courses. So I think like other finance people may appreciate it. So I have data science A to Z. I have become a product manager. This is something that I'm thinking about a lot. And I think that MBA should be replaced by product management, maybe. Then I have data science and machine learning and SQL database design. It's yours course as well. And Lead SQL Bootcamp. And I'm planning to probably purchase your brother's business processes course.
Yeah, that's also a good course to look into. All right, so that's quite an interesting suite of data science and other courses that you're working with. So kind of like brings me to the next question I had, was like, how do you apply currently data science in your role? What do you use data science for as the vice president of finance?
I actually don't, because we don't have sophisticated systems, and we're using QuickBooks Online, and we're not capturing data yet. So we're developing a platform which will automate design and garment items manufacturing. This will be a platform. But right now we have a running business, which is basically production of fashion items offshore. And the business is run. And it's a lucrative business. It's a huge business around the globe. And we're trying to capture it and automate it. So there's lots of automation to be done. And once the platform is going to be there, at least bits and parts of it, then we're going to have like lots of information to capture, and then we can apply whatever data science there is. But right now, okay, I have my QuickBooks stuff, and I'm basically playing with them using a pivot chart in Excel.
All right, gotcha. So Basically, you're kind of learning all this data science stuff in preparation for what's to come. So even though you're not applying data science, or you don't have the capacity to apply data science right now in your company, you're anticipating the change and disruption that this field is going to bring, and you're already preparing for it in advance. Is that about right?
Yes, I am. I actually had a meetup recently. I was thinking how to create my next step stack, because QuickBooks is was not serving my needs anymore. It's a very simple program. It's really agile, but small businesses, right? Very small businesses. And I was thinking what should I do? And I got there's an interesting company. It's called Intact. And they developed this cloud solution, which is very agile, very user-friendly, and it covers lots of business processes as well, because accounting is about business processes, right? Without it, no accounting. And it also integrates with different solutions. We have solutions on invoice issuing and collections. It's actually, there are not many solutions there, but it's it's a whole process there, basically code to cash. Once you sold something, then you need to collect money, right? So, and there are different platforms that are used to actually get you to issue those quotes and then sign the contract and then issue invoices and finally get the cash. And there's a huge area which is being automated. There are a couple of companies working in that area. And I actually met with the founder, one of them recently, really interesting guy. I'm going to talk to you about him maybe later for your podcast. Fantastic guy. And then there are other solutions which manage your expenses, your bills. And so with the advent of APIs, you can basically integrate, you can create your own stack. One of my alums, he's a German guy, and he moved recently to Silicon Valley. And he's an investor, angel investor in several startups. And he was saying, what's now important is the finance manager who can create a stack of accounting solutions, for early stage startup, then for kind of later stage startup, because you have a pre-series A, then series A, B, C, and then an IPO. So when it's IPO, it's kind of a different knowledge is required. But before that, you should create your stack of applications.
What's a stack of applications?
Okay, the stack of applications is basically a core application, accounting application, and then other applications which are connected to this application. So you have your QuickBooks, Intact, Xero, NetSuite, and they serve your core stuff. And then you have your Adaptive Insights, FP&A. Then you have your Bill.com for bill payments, or Copa for your kind of regular sourcing and logistics. And then you have Aptus, quote to cash procedures, right? And it's all been automated. So you don't have to actually, it's automated, yeah. And that's called a stack.
Okay, gotcha. So it's a combination of software. That's an interesting finance term. Okay, all right. Well, thanks for sharing that. That's some great insights into the world of finance. I'm a bit cautious of time, and I'd like to move on to some rapid fire questions leading up to the end of the podcast. How does that sound?
Sure.
All right. Okay. So here we go. What's the biggest challenge that you've ever faced that is related to data or data science?
I didn't have much experience with data, fortunately or unfortunately. So if I'm going to answer your question, my challenge is dealing with numerous Excel spreadsheets. And Excel is a total anarchy. And so I need to get all types of information from there. And it's a total pain. And that's a challenge, because everybody's Excel is so dear to their heart. And if you kind of criticize them, everyone is hurt.
All right. Gotcha. I've heard a lot of those similar answers on the podcast Excel. Yeah, there's so many other tools that can be used. All right, question number two. What is your most favorite thing about data and, how it can or is changing your role that you're in?
I guess data is like a cold, hard truth in majority of cases. So, human brain is not designed to make rational decisions. and data helps us to make those rational decisions.
Yeah, it helps you be very rational. Great, great answer. Love it. And we've talked a little bit about this, but in a, you know, a one sentence summary, where do you think the field of data is going? Like in the space of finance, naturally, because that's where you're focused. Where do you think this combination of fields of finance and data is going? What should our listeners prepare for in the future?
I mean, where it goes to, it should be some kind of integrated solution, which is easy to use, and where you don't have to learn like Python or R or whatever. So I hope the solution will appear soon.
And how do we prepare for that?
We need to learn Python, and we need to learn statistics and understand what it is. So like, there's no escape from hard skills.
All right. So yeah, that's a great answer. Hard skills are always going to be important, and they're definitely worthwhile investing your time. So thanks a lot, Aziz, for coming on the show. I think you shared some valuable insights, and I'm really appreciative that we actually spoke a lot about your career. And it's a great way to learn how to build your own career for our listeners, to dissect somebody's journey that they've had through their career. And how can our listeners contact you or follow you or learn more about how your career progresses in the future if they'd like to get in touch? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
LinkedIn is the best way.
LinkedIn, beautiful. Yeah, we'll leave a URL in the show notes. And I've got one final question for you. What is your one favorite book that can help our listeners become better data scientists or just better structure their careers in their journey through life?
The one book, if you want like that one book, is probably Tools of Titans.
Tools of Titans.
By Tim Ferriss. Yeah. And it basically summarizes all the life hacks which are fad and fashionable right now. So you will like some of them, you will hate some of them, but at least you will know about them.
That's a really good summary. And have you read the book to the end yourself, or are you like going through it right
no,
now?
No, I'm going through it right now. And
I totally get it. Because I actually have, believe it or not, like right next to me on the floor, I have a box with five of these books, and they're massive, right? Tim Ferriss's books usually quite big. These are huge. And like, be prepared. They weigh like, I don't know, like half a kilo each. And I bought five of them because, you know, it's Tim Ferriss, and I've read the other one, like most of his other books. And, you know, I just bought them for presents for people who want to build careers and who are in business. And it just came out like, what, a month ago? So if, so thanks a lot for mentioning it. So if our listeners, you haven't, you haven't read Tim Ferriss, he's the author of The 4-Hour Workweek, by the way. This is his brand new book, so definitely check it out. It's like, even without opening it, even without having opened it, I know that it's got so much value in it right away, because he interviewed all these people on his podcast and then summarized it in a book. So yeah, check it out.
Yeah, if you allow me, I add something else. It's like an encyclopedia. So on foods, on like exercises, and on like productivity, whatever. So you can like read some of the chapters. And you don't have to read it all. It's not like a big story.
Yeah, it's like a glossary of stuff. The title again is Tools of Titans. And we'll also leave a link on the show notes. Well, thank you very much again, Aziz. It was a pleasure having you on board on the podcast. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners would have picked up quite a few great insights from your career and from things that you've shared today.
Thanks a lot, Kirill. It was nice meeting you. And I suggest that we contact again, and you will see how something changed in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. It's a very dynamic world. I'm sure things will change. We'd love to have you on again. All right. Have a great day and take care. Thanks a lot.
All right. Cheers. Bye.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed this discussion with Aziz Mammatov. Something different, something to spice up our podcast, and not as techie, not as focused on data science this time, but more focused on career development and career progression. And of course, how data science and data is just disrupting the space of finance, and what Aziz can see from his years and years of experience in that field. And my personal favorite part of this show was the way Aziz has structured his career, the way, in fact, the mentality that he's put onto his whole career, that he has never been afraid to move on. He has never been afraid to experiment, to find new companies, find new opportunities, to travel the world. He's lived in so many different countries where his career has taken him. He's actively seeked out very interesting opportunities. He's leveraged his previous connections. And I think a lot of us can learn from that, that even if you're not looking to change a career, even if you're not looking to move on, you can still find opportunities around you all the time. Opportunities for other things, for entrepreneurship, opportunities for maybe philanthropy, opportunities for helping the community, opportunities for having a part-time role in a another business or freelancing and things like that. So the opportunities are all around us. It's about opening our minds to them. And I think that's a very, very important part of building a career and in a very important part of life overall in general as well. So there we go. I hope you enjoyed today's show. You can get the show notes at www.superdatascience.com/27. There you can also get the episode transcript as well as all of the materials that were mentioned in this episode. And you can also find Aziz's LinkedIn and follow him there. So don't forget to hit him up and follow him. And while we're on the topic of social media, connect with me on LinkedIn as well. I am always open to new connections and would love to get in touch. So you can find me on LinkedIn. Just search for Kirill Romanko and hit me up with a connection. I will always accept from a fellow data scientist. And I can't wait to see you next time. Until then, happy analyzing.